From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Raby, sitting in for John Horn. Today, with the debut of Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus, we need help to navigate all the new shows, and we get it. Then, as actor and producer Mark Ruffalo combines environmental activism with art in the new film, Dark Waters.
I came up from Stella Adler. She was part of the group theater. They were radicals. They believed that theater could change the world. And she used to quote George Bernard Shaw all the time, and she'd say, "You should have to pay to go to church, and theater should be free."
And Ellen DeGeneres shows a little KPCC love. All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Raby, in for John Horn. TV critic Daniel Feinberg is exhausted. The debut of streaming platforms from Disney and Apple, on top of everything else that's already out there, and even more services launching next year. We called up Feinberg, who writes for The Hollywood Reporter, to check in on the streaming wars and what it means for quality television.
Disney Plus is trying to make itself so ubiquitous that you can't avoid it. What Disney Plus has is this remarkable library of content, which is all the Disney Vault movies, all of the Pixar movies, all of the Star Wars movies, all the Marvel movies. I could keep going because then there are 600 episodes of The Simpsons. So what they're trying to do is overwhelm you with the very idea that if you don't have Disney Plus, you simply are unable to watch everything you want to watch in the entire world.
What is Apple TV trying to do?
What Apple TV is trying to do is something a good deal more boutique, because unlike Disney Plus, they don't have that library where they can say, okay, here are 700 movies and 70,000 hours of TV and all of that. What they're trying to do is saying, we've curated these five new shows that you absolutely positively need to watch, but also you're probably going to buy a new Apple product in the next 12 months anyway, so we'll give it to you for free once you buy that new computer, quote unquote, free.
In your article, you reviewed several of the Disney shows, and I don't think you're exactly saying they're good. They sound more like formula.
I would say that between Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus, I don't know that there is a quote-unquote essential show on a this is one of the 10 best shows on TV level. On the other hand, there are a bunch of shows that are good on a this is fun, this is reassuring, this is familiar on that level. So Disney Plus has The Mandalorian, which is sometimes fun and sometimes cute, and it's making some people excited. It's not a great TV show, but I think it's a TV show that gives people what they want. I think that Apple TV Plus has a slightly harder task, largely because a lot of their shows did not get particularly good reviews because they, for the most part, all start off in kind of bumpy creative places. So it's a challenge. Still waiting for one of these services to give us kind of a classic show, but I don't know that necessarily if you look at the first couple shows that, say, Netflix produced, that there was necessarily the instant classic unless you happen to really, really love House of Cards, which a lot of people did. I just happen not to have.
Is there danger that the higher quality shows from other services will be drowned out?
It's always a danger. And I think the biggest danger, more than anything, is the five or six of the best shows are going to have every critic in the country saying you have to watch this. And so that will cut through at least to some degree. But I think that where we currently are is in a place where there's more good or very good TV out there than ever before. Maybe not more great TV. And so that's a different kind of thing where a lot of things are maybe B plus A minus TV. And that's where I think the stuff is going to get drowned out, because it's going to be harder for there to be any sort of consensus saying you have to watch this good show, because everyone's going to be going, you have to watch this great show. And that's where I get a little concerned, is a lot of smaller, very good shows that maybe could be great if people watched that are going to get a little bit drowned out. I guess that's where my job comes, is making sure that I'm out there banging the drum as much as humanly possible for the shows that I think are special.
Wasn't 2015 supposed to be peak TV? Somebody said that?
John Landgraf of FX told us it was peak TV. He didn't say that it had reached the absolute peak, but he anticipated at a certain point in the next couple years that production was going to slow down a tiny bit. That has not happened at all. All we need to do is look on the horizon, where in addition to more and more programming from Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus, we have HBO Max, which could potentially be as big or bigger than those two coming next May. You have Peacock from NBC Universal that's coming. It's going to be big. It's not just that we're not slowing down. It's possibly that it's accelerating.
for a consumer, you know, just people paying their bills, with so many streaming services out there, are we really expected to pay for all of them individually?
I think the assumption that everybody in my business is making is that eventually kind of a cable 2.0 is going to insinuate itself into the process. That after all of these months and years of these services saying, okay, we need to get away from cable, we need to unbundle, we need to cut the cord, whatever it is, at a certain point, someone is going to find a way to make it easier on the consumers. That is the way that the economy works. We're not there yet, and I don't know how soon we're going to get there. It might be 2 years, it could potentially be 5 years. And if it's 5 years, a lot of people could get nickeled and dimed out of, you know, out of their budgets.
And before we let you go, give our listeners one show to watch on Disney Plus and one show to watch on Apple TV Plus.
The Mandalorian is the show that people are talking about and whatever, but I don't think it really needs my support. So if I'm putting my support behind one show, it's Encore, which reunites High School Musicals from decades past with basically all of the people returning years later, reuniting and putting on shows that they did back in high school. It's kind of sweet. It's amusing. And if you're a theater kid or have the heart of a theater kid, you'll love it. So that's my recommendation on Disney Plus. As for Apple TV Plus, I think Dickinson, which might be the smallest of the initial launch of Apple TV Plus shows starring Haley Steinfeld, is really charming. If you can get behind it's these are people in the 19th century, but a lot of them are talking like they're teenagers from the 21st century gimmick. It's funny. Haley Steinfeld is giving a great lead performance, and there's just enough kind of inside 19th century American history knowledge to it to make it have some substance. So I would say Encore on Disney TV Plus and Dickinson on Apple TV Plus.
Daniel Feinberg is television critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on The Frame, actor Mark Ruffalo tells John Horn how movies can help society.
You can't decide, oh, I'm going to make this movie and it's going to change the world. The culture calls the piece forth. And so the movie comes out of the cultural need and lands in a specific time and place.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Raby, sitting in today for John Horn. Mark Ruffalo has played the Hulk in all the Avengers movies, but for his new film, Dark Waters, directed by Todd Haynes, he's playing a real-life hero, attorney Rob Billett. Billett worked at a law firm that defended chemical companies until he uncovered the toxic truth behind Teflon.
And every scientist who knows anything about any of this already works for these chemical companies. That's not an accident, Earl. Earl, these companies, they have all the money, all the time, and they'll use it. Trust me. I know. I was one of them.
Here's The Frame's John Horn talking with Mark Ruffalo.
This is a person who moved every year of his life, had never was able to lay down roots anywhere, was very guarded. He's very guarded, you know, never really learned to trust people, never. But there's this magical moment in his youth on this farm milking cows, and you know, we don't play it heavily, but that's like a motivator. It's like where the light is, you know, that happy moment, that connection to something that keyed in him. And of course, his grandmother, who he loved so much and had such a beautiful relationship with, that sort of reminded him of who he was, I think, ultimately. And it took him on this journey. And he started, you know, I honestly, Rob thought this was going to be a few phone calls to some of his pals at DuPont and the whole thing would be cleared up. He never expected it to go this far. And he always thought that once he showed just this much truth, that everyone would get it and everything would be righted. And that just turned into 17 years.
And I'm wondering, as an actor, because you have a scene opposite Bucky Bailey, who was a kid who was born with birth defects attributable to what DuPont was putting in the water. As an actor playing this character, it's a story about litigation and discovery and papers. But when you actually come face to face with the real person, the real consequence of what DuPont has done, how does it affect you not only as a performer, but as somebody who is producing this movie and bringing it into the world.
It's very moving to me. That was the last scene of the shoot.
Wow.
And after we did it, I looked around and the entire crew was crying. It finally dawned on us what we had been endeavoring to accomplish, what it meant to so many people, and how serious the nature of it was. The one thing that Todd has done beautifully is like really, you know, it's about Rob and it's about this lawyer, but really like has brought the community into it. A lot of times what happens in these situations, and or what happens even in the environmental movement, is you'll center on a big environmental org, they'll center it on themselves in fundraising, or someone will center it on themselves as an ego thing or a white savior or a savior. And I've seen that happen, and it doesn't do the community good. So we're keeping it in mind to always have the community's participation in one way or another, and then to have them be there in reality. And that lends an authenticity and credibility to it, although it's scary and it could, you know, it's provocative and it can be ego-busting at times, but I think it's the right thing to do.
What is the right thing to do? Because I think that's such an interesting idea, and you're describing this scene with Bucky and what it meant not only to you but also everybody who's working on the film. How important is it that point of the movie is something you love as well?
It's very important to me. I've been an activist since the Iraq War. That's kind of where I really cut my teeth. And everything that happened during that time. But I also moved my family to upstate New York in the middle of the fracking boom and fought that with my neighbors, farmers, prison guards, expatriates from New York City. And I saw how powerful it was for, you know, a celebrity to be with them and what that drew to them and how it gave them a voice. And I've been doing activism of that sort for a long time. And my model is to get the spotlight long enough to throw the people you need to hear from in it. And I started to stumble upon, you know, like The Kids Are All Right and Spotlight, this other kind of thing that was really melding my craft and storytelling and filmmaking with these bigger ideas and questions. This is not new, you know, but for the first time, I'm in a position where I was able to, you know, develop something and use my name and, you know, the cachet that I've gotten with the Avengers to tell a story that I felt in this divisive time. Because activism can be scary to people, and ideologically people will immediately shut down to it, but storytelling never is. And I think just the power of storytelling will heal us, you know? And that was why I wanted to make this. That's why I was so turned on by it. It's a whole system that has been rigged against our health. And I felt like this is the right moment to talk about it.
We're talking with Mark Ruffalo, the producer and actor in Dark Waters. What did the experience of making Spotlight do in terms of your interest in this material? What did you see that movie was able to accomplish? Obviously, it was well celebrated. It won a minor award, Academy Award for Best Picture. But what did it do in the conversation that made you think that telling the story of DuPont might follow?
It normalized the survivors. It led us into them and see them and feel them and feel pathos for them. And it emboldened other survivors to come out and speak up. And it emboldened the people on the front line of these movements who have been stymied in one way or another by the mainstream media or by politicians or just by indifference to keep fighting. And it's changed the world. I mean, it's almost a 1,000-year-old paradigm that is finally shifting. And that movie was part of that discussion. Now, a movie doesn't, you can't decide, oh, I'm going to make this movie and it's going to change the world. The culture calls the piece forth. And so the movie comes out of the cultural need and lands in a specific time and place where we're ready to have that discussion. And that's what I saw with Spotlight. And that's what I really felt. And I know Participant felt that way. And we're rushing to get this movie made. I mean, we did this in like less than 3 years.
Why was it important to go so fast?
Because, you start to sense where we're headed, you know. Flint, Michigan had happened. There was PFAS contaminations were coming up in New York, Hoosick Falls, in North Carolina, the military bases, you know. It was like it was starting to bubble to the surface, but there was no container for it to have a broad focused discussion about it yet.
The other thing that I think is consistent with Spotlight and Dark Waters, and there's been a lot of conversation over the last couple of months about whistleblowers and accountability. Mm-hmm. That Spotlight is a team of journalists exposing a truth. Dark Waters is about a lawyer and a law firm exposing, you know, a hidden truth. I'm wondering if that's something you also think is important, that there are people that are going to work outside of government to hold people in power accountable.
There's a great quote in the movie. It's like, you know, they're not going to protect us, not the government, not the scientists, we have to protect us.
They want to show the world it's no use fighting. Look, everybody, even he can't crack the maze, and he's helped build it. The system is rigged. They want us to think it'll protect us, but that's a lie. We protect us. We do. Nobody else.
And that's what I think ultimately the spirit of the movie is. And when I say we, I mean that we have to be awake together. We have to be informed, and we have to be active, and we have to be part of this world. But you need people for whatever reason. You know, Rob was living in a culture where you go for the money, you go for the career, you go for the prestige. You know, that's the path that the world is telling him around him to take.
You're describing Hollywood as well as a law firm. You know that.
I'm describing the entire United States.
That's true.
And probably the world, okay? We are a materialistic culture. We're told every single day that that's what's going to bring us happiness. But for whatever reason, this man, Rob Bellott, chose this other path. It's a spiritual path. It's, although we're not saying that, but it's another path. And for whatever reason, he followed what was right, and he did it at the cost of his house, his home, his family, his health. And it's right now we look around us politically, and what we're being told is we're all shit. Everyone is selfish. It's best to be selfish. Everyone's horrible anyway, so you might as well just get whatever you can while you can get it. And we need to hear stories about people who do things because it's right, because it's kindly, because it's decent, and that's a reality. That's actually, it's real. That's not something that's made up. That's something that's real, and there are real people out there doing it.
Coming up, Mark Ruffalo talks more with John Horn about heroes, superheroes, and corporate greed. This is The Frame. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Raby, sitting in for John Horn. The new Todd Haynes movie, Dark Waters, opens today. It stars Mark Ruffalo, who plays real-life lawyer Rob Billett, who risked his health and his financial well-being to expose the toxic truth behind DuPont's Teflon. Ruffalo also starred in the Oscar-winning film Spotlight about the journalist who exposed the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. Here's more of John Horn's conversation with Mark Ruffalo.
I came up from Stella Adler. She was part of the group theater. They were radicals. They believed that theater could change the world. And she used to quote George Bernard Shaw all the time, and she'd say, "You should have to pay to go to church, and theater should be free." Because that's where we learn about each other. That's how we learn about ourselves. And so I've always sort of gravitated to things that had meaning to them. And more as I'm getting older and my career's kind of in a way established. I'm established as an actor. You know, I find myself like really wanting to push push the envelope and push myself and do these kinds of stories that are like Spotlight and are like Dark Waters.
How do you fit the Marvel movies into that equation? They seem to be outliers to everything you've just described.
I don't really see it like that.
Okay.
The superhero, those mythology stories are in our DNA. I think part of the reason we want those stories and we respond to those stories is because of our need for a just world. And particularly now, those movies are about fighting evil and, you know, they have a morality to them. It's a simple morality and it's gods and monsters, so it's fantastical. But that's the ethos of the time we're living in. We want heroes. We sense something is out of balance. We sense that there is a force that is malignant and self-serving, and that we need to fight that. This is not coming out of the blue. This is not something that is manufactured, all right? But when you get to Rob's not a hero because we want to be him. He's a hero because we don't. He takes that journey that so few of us have the courage to take. And that's moving to us.
So much of the movie Dark Waters, I think, is about corporate greed. It is about a calculation that a company makes saying these products may be dangerous, but they're making us $1 billion in revenue every year.
That's
so
it,
we're going to make this trade. And it got me thinking, and I apologize for asking this, but it got me thinking about you work for Marvel, which is part of the Walt Disney Company, whose CEO makes $65 million, where 1/10 of employees at Disneyland have been homeless in the last 2 years.
That's horrible.
And it's 14, he's making 1,400 times the average median pay of Disney employees. So it's not just DuPont. Everybody's making this calculation about making as much as you can and screw the little guy.
This is a sickness that we're living in. This is the discussion that we're having. This is what we see when we drive through Hollywood. Something is terribly out of balance here. One of the things about the film that I realized during the screening was, wow, look at this. So on the front end, they're poisoning us to save a buck, to make a buck, okay? We go through our lives poisoned, we get sick, then we have to pay to make ourselves better. But if the state had a stake in our health care, I promise you our food and our water and our air would get cleaned up real fast, because someone would do a cost-benefit analysis of that and they would see that all of this poisoning, this corporate welfare, by not making corporations actually make sure that what they're putting into our bodies and into the environment is healthy and safe for us. If they had to do that, we would be healthy and safe. This is a sickness. When democracy is in service of capitalism, you have a sickness. Capitalism should be in service of the democracy, not the other way around. And when you measure the health of a society, the health of a nation, purely on economic or GDP outcomes and outputs, you're headed for a disaster. And that's what we're living through right now. And that's why we need a revolution of spirit, of decency, of selflessness, us, not me. You know, I don't mean to get on my soapbox here, but we all see it. You know, you can't go anywhere right now without seeing the disease of it. And it's not like it's not fixable either.
Mark Ruffalo, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
John Horn talking with Mark Ruffalo. His new film, Dark Waters, opens today. Before we close the show, this week, KPCC got a major shout-out from an unexpected source. To counter the OK Boomer meme, Ellen DeGeneres brought a millennial onto her show and asked her to operate a film camera, a manual typewriter, and a boombox.
So you're going to try to find a radio station on here. You're going to find NPR. It's 89.3.
What am I supposed to be doing?
89.3 FM. You have to put the antenna up so you can get.
Oh.
Yeah. All right. 89.3.
89.3? No.
All right. You seem panicked. Let's just turn that off. All right.
That's 89.3 KPCC. And that's all for today. On the Frame Weekend, Saturday at 2, Flea tells John Horn about growing up in a chaotic household filled with violence and jazz. The Frame is produced by Darby Maloney, Monica Bushman, Jonathan Shiflett, and Julia Paskin, with help this week from Emily Henderson. Our news clerk is Andrea Gutierrez, and our intern is Paul Ratliff. Eduardo Perez is our engineer. The theme music is by Taylor McFerrin, and our senior producer is Oscar Garza.